Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our best interviews are often highlighted right on the main screen? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
From the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the laureate Peter Diamond. Professor Diamond, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there's so much to talk about. I think if I can get you to 3 p.m., you and I can go nonstop here. Let's start with your thoughts with Emmanuel Saez of Berkeley. And he, of course, writing up a storm in the New York Times a few weeks ago on income inequality, this debate over income distribution. If you were to speak to the politicians in Washington, what is the myth of income distribution and income inequality that they get wrong?
The focus in our op-ed is just, let's think about policy. Let's think about our normal concerns. And let's not focus on distribution per se, but let's look at some of the implications coming from it. Whatever level of spending the government settles on, it's got to be covered by taxes, taxes sooner or taxes later. So a central question that can't be avoided is how to spread the burden of paying the taxes across different people. And when income distribution becomes more unequal, that argues for a more progressive taxation, because the very high-income people are better able to bear the burden of taxes than your average taxpayer.
I want to ask a question that my colleague Ken Pruitt would ask you, Professor Diamond, and that is, if we need a more progressive system, do we have an artificial structure in that somewhat half of our people pay no federal taxes? Do we need to drive the progressivity to a greater number of people, even if we raise the taxes on the wealthy?
Absolutely not. First of all, let's recognize that everybody working is paying a payroll tax, and that's financing Social Security. But at this stage, because our parents and grandparents got such a good deal from Social Security, the younger people are taking up the burden of what is similar to the burden in the national debt. Secondly, the earned income tax credit is one of the great successes of policy. And that means there are people getting money back to encourage them to work. By and large, these low-income people have great needs for their money. Food, health care, which is inadequately provided, shelter, education for their kids, food for their kids, health for their kids. The idea that there's any social purpose achieved by making low-income people pay some income tax on top of the sales tax and the payroll tax seems to me totally without merit.
Peter, the Laffer curve, and I can honestly say, and I've had the privilege of interviewing the late Jude Winiski and Professor Laffer any number of times, hugely controversial, and I go to the certitude of it in that it's a symmetric curve. We all know it looks like the St. Louis Arch. Harold Ehrlich, among others at Chicago, would say, well, we can't be so certain of that. What is the thing that bugs you about the certitude conservatives have about the Laffer curve?
That there is a Laffer curve is without question. That it's symmetric has zero underlying empirical support. It's not something you can derive from theory that it needs to be symmetric. In fact, the underlying theory, if you crank it out from assumptions or estimates of labor supply behavior, tells you it's not symmetric. So the question that Emmanuel Saez and I were addressing is, let's look at the evidence. Looking at the evidence is what we as professional economists believe in. We've got a lot of data on tax returns. There's no simple way of drawing answers out of that. So there is a large literature which explores under different underlying assumptions what kind of estimate you would make on the shape of the Laffer curve. And we in the op-ed point out there's no way of pinpointing a single tax rate as being the tax rate at the peak of the Laffer curve, because there are a bunch of estimates out there. So we focused on finding a range where it's very likely the answer is somewhere in that range.
Our goal is to get to the peak of the St. Louis Arch and up there by the top of the Laffer curve. And if we're on a snowboard or a surfboard and it's asymmetric, it's not perfectly shaped, how critical is that? That point where the surfboard going up the St. Louis Arch, that slope at that point, how critical is that as part of the analysis versus just a simple idea, we got to get to the top of the arch?
We don't have to get to the top of the arch. The question is, how much revenue do you want to take from the people who can really afford to bear the burden of paying taxes against how much more we want to leave with them, given that we're not quite sure where that point is. So I personally, Saez and I don't have identical views on this, I personally approach this as saying we want to stay in the realm where we're very confident that we have an overshot. And so I'm pushing for a tax rate on people with earnings above, say, $400,000, of roughly 50%, which, of course, was the Reagan first administration tax rate. So I'm appealing to Reagan to say this is a perfectly reasonable number, and I have a great deal of confidence that we haven't overshot that point. This is not snowboarding. This is not something where it's a slippery slope. You pick a number, you see what happens. You can change it. Politics are like that.
Well, you and Professor Saez wrote in the Wall Street Journal, in the post-war U.S., higher top tax rates tend to go with higher economic growth, not lower. Could you explain that?
Well, I think the critical sentence in the op-ed is the sentence that says, this in no way proves anything. What we were doing, and obviously when you're down to 1,000 words for an op-ed, you're not having the ability to express it, is lots of people say, oh, it's obvious high tax rates will slow growth. We just want to make the point that it's not. That if you look at the growth rates and you think that's a way of answering the question, you get something all over the place because the impact of a tax change on the economy depends on the state of the economy. It's very different in high unemployment times and full employment times. My view is we learn nothing that's subtle or interesting from looking at growth rates and tax rates and the extent to which the timing correlates. What we've got to do is dig into what makes the economy really tick. And so the lesson we were hoping people would draw from that statement is not that that's the way it is, but flat-out statements that you see all the time that it must be the case that high tax rates slow the economy are just plain flat-out wrong. It's a complex story.
It is a complex story. Speaking of complexity, one final question, if we could, Professor Diamond. If you're called upon, will you replace Bobby Valentine with the Boston Red Sox?
Absolutely.
What is going on up there? For our New York listeners and for those of you around the world, this is most interesting is essentially someone from New York is coaching the Boston Red Sox. How has the response been, sir?
It's wait and see. Obviously, nothing will generate popularity with the fans like success.
That's a very safe
thing. And it's not there yet, but, you know, 3 days in Minnesota is a real boost.
It's a real boost. Professor Diamond, thank you.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.